Again, Medical Education Podcast listeners, this is Kevin Eve, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal, coming to you today with something that's brand new. A number of people in a variety of contexts have suggested they would enjoy audio versions of the papers that we published, and wanting nothing more than to give you good value, we decided to give it a try. This podcast is one of a few produced by asking intrepid authors to read their article verbatim for your listening pleasure. We'll judge the value of this pilot by download rate, podcast ratings, and any tweets you care to send promoting the initiative. If you'd like to give feedback, please email me at kevin.eva@ubc.ca. And if you like this initiative, we'll continue doing it as long as we can find authors who are willing to engage.
My name is Brian Wong, and I'm going to be reading an article entitled Application of Continuous Quality Improvement to Medical Education, a paper that I wrote with Dr. Linda Hedrick. Section 1, Introduction. Educational changes and innovations fall short of achieving their intended goals for a variety of reasons. One common contributor is the propensity towards solutionism, described as the tendency to jump to a solution and adopt its surface features without incorporating an understanding of the deeper theory and evidence to design a robust and thoughtful implementation approach. The explicit, intentional, and systematic application of continuous quality improvement in medical education practice and research can overcome the solutionism pitfall, improve medical education, and help it achieve its goals. We use the word can purposefully. Achieving sustained improvement is hard. Regulatory and accreditation bodies, such as the Liaison Committee on Medical Education, or the LCME, already include clear language in their standards requiring that schools engage in quality improvement to improve the educational process. That said, this does not mean that schools necessarily know how best to leverage quality improvement methods to improve their programs. Furthermore, while an increasing number of new faculty members now graduate with some quality improvement knowledge and expertise, many medical faculty members did not have quality improvement as part of their professional preparation at any level. We are handicapped if we try to do quality improvement without the knowledge generated by decades of improvement science. Batalden and Davidoff defined quality improvement as, quote, the combined and unceasing efforts of everyone, healthcare professionals, patients and their families, researchers, payers, planners, and educators, to make the changes that will lead to better patient outcomes, health, better system performance, care, and better professional development, learning. W. Edwards Deming argued that transformation of a system requires an outside view. He called this outside lens a system of profound knowledge, a map of theory by which to understand the organizations that we work in. In the late 1980s, a small group of hospitals in the northeastern United States became curious about Deming's work and established the National Demonstration Project to try his ideas out in healthcare. By 2001, the Institute of Medicine defined quality in healthcare as safe, effective, patient-centered, timely, efficient, and equitable. They called for changing the structure and function of the healthcare environment by A, applying evidence to healthcare delivery, B, using information technology, C, aligning payment policies with quality improvement, and D, preparing the workforce. Following up in 2003, the Institute of Medicine published an overarching vision for health professions education. All health professionals should be educated to deliver patient-centered care as members of an interdisciplinary team, emphasizing evidence-based practice, quality improvement approaches, and informatics. Education in quality improvement and patient safety is now required as part of the core professional preparation of physicians, and medical educators are exploring the application of quality improvement to medical education itself. There are key commonalities between quality improvement and medical education. First, both are about learning, experiencing, reflecting, thinking, and acting in continuous cycles that spiral to sustained advancement. Second, context is important. Gaining and using knowledge are parts of the same process, and the context of that application can have a profound impact on the results. Third, in both education and quality improvement, active partnerships with those whom we serve, learners or patients and families, help us achieve excellence by tailoring both processes and outcomes to their needs. Deming's system of profound knowledge is the intellectual underpinning of continuous quality improvement. We define these in box one. Deming argues strongly that there are four highly interrelated elements that are required: appreciation of a system, knowledge of theory, knowledge about variation, and knowledge of psychology. In the paragraphs below, we define and explore each of the four domains and their application in medical education, comparing and contrasting personal and published examples that demonstrate the relevance of Deming's principles to medical education. We also provide an in-depth description of one organization's experience using Deming's principles explicitly to inform their system of resident assessment. We conclude with recommendations for how educators' informed and authentic use of quality improvement principles can improve medical education and help it achieve its ultimate goal of improved health and healthcare. Section 2, System of Profound Knowledge, Lessons Learned from Quality Improvement with Implications for Medical Education Practice and Scholarship. 2.1, Appreciation of a System. A system is a network of interdependent components and processes that need to work together to accomplish the system's aim. If any part focuses only on its own independent goals, the success of the system will be compromised. Thus, each system needs to be managed, with their various components and processes manipulated in order to achieve the desired outcomes. In quality improvement, a fundamental initial step of any improvement activity involves establishing a clear understanding of underlying processes as they currently exist, using tools such as process maps, fishbone diagrams, or Pareto charts. Jumping to a solution without carrying out this crucial step often leads to unsuccessful implementation, or even worse, unintended negative consequences. In medical education, numerous systems exist that educators might seek to improve, ranging from relatively simple and predictable ones like ensuring an objective structured clinical examination or an OSCE runs smoothly and on time, to extremely complex ones such as introducing changes to a medical school's admission process to achieve greater equity and diversity. Irrespective of how simple or complex the problem, for quality improvement efforts in medical education to succeed, they require that everyone involved explicitly acknowledge and recognize the underlying system and its interrelated components and processes, a clear definition of the system's overall aim, and deliberate use of diagnostic tools to identify changes to the system that might lead to improvement. In both quality improvement and medical education, there are numerous cautionary tales where failure to fully characterize and attend to existing processes of complex systems prior to introducing changes led to interventions falling short of achieving their intended outcomes. For example, one of us tried to implement an educational patient handover bundle to improve internal medicine residents' communication of on-call overnight issues to their daytime teams. We based the intervention's design on a thorough review of the published patient handoff literature, documented barriers to morning handover, and implemented training sessions that used cases and role play to teach residents to use a structured communication approach when handing over on-call issues in the morning. While we recognize the need for workflow changes to create dedicated time and space for uninterrupted handover of on-call issues in the morning, we did not have influence over the broader system-level clinical processes, for example, institutional pressures to discharge patients early in the day and timing of interdisciplinary rounds, that ran counter to our educational aims to improve morning handover. As such, despite our best efforts to educate residents, we even demonstrated that adherence to a structured communication approach improved, the actual degree to which residents communicated overnight on-call issues did not increase. Our educational and clinical systems and their aims were not sufficiently aligned. Some educators have explicitly attempted to link systems theory to medical education. For example, Harrison used a systems-based framework to describe and analyze the processes that influence whether continuing professional development, or CPD, activities translate new knowledge into physicians' practices. This systems-based CPD framework illustrates how educational processes and practice-based improvement processes, each with their own set of players, funders, levers, and regulatory requirements, often lack alignment of purpose and agendas. Taking a systems-based approach makes explicit the aim of improved patient outcomes and directs efforts towards creating greater alignment between educational and practice-based improvement processes. For example, the University of Kansas Hospital formed an interprofessional team that included physician, nursing, and pharmacy members to align organizational CPD with quality improvement aims and developed strategic educational and system operational plans to decrease the incidence of venous thromboembolism in hospitalized patients at their academic medical center. Their broad educational plan, informed by the causes of venothromboembolism as delineated by a detailed venothromboembolism chart review, included activities aimed at improving awareness, for example, case-based safety conferences, a website, resident orientation integration, and adoption, for example, nursing unit education, audit and feedback. By coordinating these educational activities with system-level interventions aimed at promoting adherence to process changes, for example, standardized orders, clinical decision support with best practice alerts, their program led to a significant reduction in hospital venothromboembolism rates from 12.7 per 1,000 patients to 6.1 per 1,000 patients. Section 2.2, Theory of Knowledge. According to the System of Profound Knowledge, the theory of knowledge helps to define both what changes will work as well as how best to implement them. It presupposes that we build knowledge for implementing changes through systematic comparison of prediction with observation. Quality improvement connects prediction to learning through the use of Plan, Do, Study, Act, or PDSA cycles. PDSA cycles are the building blocks of continuous improvement and shares commonalities with other cyclical frameworks such as Kolb's learning cycle or the knowledge to action cycle that are familiar to medical educators. The use of PDSA echoes the scientific method in that it looks for failure, adjusts accordingly, and grows knowledge incrementally over time. A brief description of the four key steps demonstrates the power of this method. Plan. This initial step involves deciding what change you want to test, and importantly involves making a clear prediction for what will happen and why. Do. The next step involves testing the change on a small scale against the prediction you made. No test is too small. Even testing a change once can yield important learnings and inform decisions regarding next steps. This step also involves collecting some data, i.e. gathering information, making observations, or debriefing individuals to get their informal feedback. Study. The step involves analyzing what happened, reflecting on whether your prediction was correct, and summarizing what was learned. Act. The final step takes the new knowledge generated through this small test of change and uses it to guide decisions regarding the very next step, which leads into the next PDSA cycle. In quality improvement, the use of PDSA has a number of clear benefits. PDSA supports teams to make the necessary iterative refinements to the intervention or identify missing ingredients to promote successful implementation. PDSA has the advantage of building knowledge quickly through the efficient use of data and relying on a high, quote, return on failure ratio, i.e., the valuable lessons learned with relatively few resources invested. PDSA also represents an effective engagement strategy that incorporates input from stakeholders throughout the development of the intervention, which increases the chances of success by engaging them in co-creating change. A hypothetical example of PDSA applied to medical education can be seen in Box 2. While a seemingly simple and intuitive framework for continuous improvement, evidence of consistent PDSA use sometimes is lacking. Too often, improvement teams go through the motions of PDSA cycles, applying the method superficially without truly connecting prediction and observation to continuous learning. A telltale sign is when an original change idea remains roughly unchanged throughout the project, with no refinements to the intervention or the plan to implement it. Returning to the earlier example of the morning handover educational bundle, despite early evidence that our intervention needed to attend to clinical workflow to ensure greater consistency of resident handover practices, we only made modest attempts to engage the necessary stakeholders to overcome what was clearly an important implementation challenge. Instead, we focused primarily on delivering the educational component of the bundle in the same way month after month. This example highlights for medical educators the importance of embracing the cyclical nature of PDSA and the need to repeatedly refine and evolve an intervention to achieve the desired outcome. Explicit use of PDSA to improve medical education has been reported in several different contexts, including efforts to improve safety event reporting or the number of resident assessments by faculty members. There are also other examples where PDSA-like approaches have been used for program development and curriculum adaptation in medical education. For example, a faculty member's development program for education scholarship at the University of Toronto used a deliberate strategy to allow program directors to receive inputs from multiple sources to inform iterative, real-time improvements to the program design and delivery. Program leads created space for dialogue, for example, dedicated time at the start of class for reflection and discussions, implemented feedback mechanisms, for example, weekly evaluations and apprentice reports prepared by students that summarized feedback from the class on program sessions, reviewed reflection papers written by program participants, which provided course leaders with a window into ongoing challenges faced, and interviewed key opinion leaders. These inputs provided program leads with rich information about how the curriculum needed to evolve in real time, which led to iterative refinements to the program over its first 2 years. Section 2.3, knowledge about variation. The study of variation in quality improvement contributes critically to learning and allows teams to understand how a system is performing and how to improve it, or determine whether implemented changes have led to improvement. The main focus revolves around the distinction between random or, quote, common cause variation versus non-random or, quote, special cause variation. Actions needed to improve a system with special cause variation are different than those needed to improve a stable system with only common cause variation. For example, a course director who collects weekly evaluations might observe that one lecture received a particularly low score that falls outside the normal range. This represents special cause variation, and so the action needed is to focus on that particular instance. In this case, the course director would zero in on the specific lecture to try and better understand why it received a significantly lower evaluation score. On the other hand, if course evaluations are consistently low week after week, common cause variation is present. The action needed is to study the system, i.e. the course as a whole, and identify course-wide issues that require improvement. Knowledge about variation recognizes the added value of displaying data with its time order preserved, i.e. a time series, rather than aggregating it. This practice provides a visual depiction of the data variation, allows for a richer interpretation of the data, and supports teams to draw more meaningful conclusions. Consider for a moment this hypothetical example of three data sets shown in Figure 1, all of which have the same average values before and after the intervention with identical bar graphs. One might conclude that the same degree of improvement is seen in all three scenarios. However, when plotting the data as a time series, one can see data variation not visible when aggregated. In scenario A, there appears to be a clear shift improvement that coincides with the change. Scenario B shows evidence of steady improvement that preceded the change, suggesting a secular trend already underway. Scenario C shows evidence of early improvement following the change, but a trend towards the original baseline performance that suggests the change was not sustained. Only in the first scenario A should one argue that the intervention was successful and thus continue unchanged. Time series evaluations, ubiquitous in quality improvement, offer a number of distinct advantages that are relevant to medical educators. Evaluations of medical education interventions, like in quality improvement, often involve parallel efforts to define an intervention's optimal components and implementation strategy while concurrently evaluating its effects. It can be difficult to identify suitable control groups, or even undesirable for ethical reasons to allocate a group to not participate in an educational experience or curriculum, making it difficult to account for the effect of secular trends. Time series evaluations allow for refining the intervention and providing reasonable evidence of effectiveness. They offer a number of advantages over simple before-after studies in that they allow quality improvement teams to draw inferences about whether improvement occurred, as well as whether the intervention led to the observed improvement. For example, with sufficient baseline data, a time series analysis that shows only common cause variation indicates that secular trends do not exist. The presence of special cause variation following the implementation of your intervention both indicates that improvement occurred and increases your confidence that the observed improvement was due to your quality improvement efforts. Section 2.4, Psychology. Deming described the importance of understanding people and the interactions amongst them as part of the system transformation. People are different from one another and respond differently to change. Thus, one must be aware of these differences and account for them while planning for and introducing change. Psychology of human behavior suggests that there are both intrinsic and extrinsic motivators of change. While extrinsic motivation, for example, rewards and money, can yield short-term results, its effects tend to wane over time and are less likely to lead to sustained improvement. Hilton and Anderson reviewed ways to, quote, unleash intrinsic motivation as a key element of the psychology of change. With attention to the people, or the who, and their motivations, the why, to advance and sustain improvement. Certain characteristics of a change or innovation itself also support the fostering of intrinsic motivation amongst individuals to change. According to Rogers' diffusion of innovations theory, characteristics of a successful innovation include the following. Relative advantage, the degree to which an innovation is perceived as better than what currently happens. Compatibility, the degree to which an innovation is perceived to reflect the beliefs, values, and needs of the adopters. Complexity, the degree to which an innovation can be understood easily. Trialability, the degree to which the change can be tested and tried out in a way that is not too risky. Observability, the degree to which the innovation is visible to others. Factoring these considerations into improvement work, Hayes and Goldman derived a framework they called highly adoptable improvement. This framework presupposes that quality improvement strategies that have higher perceived value, defined as the belief that the change associated with the improvement initiative is of emotional, practical, and logical value to healthcare providers or things of importance to them, and that reduce workload, or at least do not add workload, are more likely to be adopted and ultimately sustained. Importantly, this model suggests that strategies focused primarily on motivating healthcare workers to change without paying equal attention to workload demands often resulted in early adoption that was not sustained. Hoffman and colleagues described through their improvement efforts the value of attending to psychology. They sought to revamp the process for generating the medical student performance evaluation letter, a summary letter of evaluation intended to provide residency program directors with an honest and objective summary of a student's salient experiences, attributes, and academic performance at the University of Missouri Columbia School of Medicine by introducing a new approach that would improve efficiency and decrease waste, increase process transparency for faculty members and students, and integrate the new medical student performance evaluation process, or MSPE, into established student performance information systems. The school had used the same paper-based workflow for 15 years, and so preparing students, faculty members, and staff to embrace a new way of preparing MSPE letters, especially one that included technology, required careful attention to the key elements of the psychology of change. In particular, they created a new workflow that led to a decrease in meeting time for the MSPE committee members, an example of relative advantage, designed their new process to harmonize several existing data systems and remove redundant documentation, an example of compatibility, invested in designing a user-friendly interface for the new technology, an example of complexity, pilot tested the solution with a functioning prototype, which allowed students and faculty members to work through the submission of a demonstration MSPE and identify gaps between initial design and actual use, an example of trialability, and engage stakeholders at multiple levels throughout the process to inform their iterative refinement of their intervention, an example of observability. Taken together, their overall appeal to intrinsic motivation was that the MSPE committee was able to spend less cognitive energy on structure and format issues and more on the content of the letters. Student requests for change in the final letter went from 18 in the final year of the old process to only one in each of the first 2 years of the new approach, providing evidence of improved validity of the letters from the student's point of view. Section 3. A real-world demonstration of the use of the system of profound knowledge to improve a program's assessment system, the University of Cincinnati Internal Medicine Program. The University of Cincinnati Internal Medicine Program implemented their program-wide assessment system for internal medicine residents and iteratively improved upon it using the lens of the system of profound knowledge. Quote, "We see our efforts as a part of a system for which the aims are clear. We look for ways to turn information into knowledge. We have a deeper and more nuanced understanding regarding variation, and we try to appreciate the psychology of motivation of assessors in the system to maximize value." They viewed their program of assessment as a very large and complex system that aims to use subcompetency entrustment data for formative feedback, summary decisions, and regulatory reporting. The interactions between the various players, i.e. faculty members, program directors, learners, influenced the quality of learner assessments. These complex interactions had to be managed in order to achieve their overall assessment system's aim, appreciation of a system. These complex interactions also led to considerable variation in their assessment data, which they needed to understand in order to translate information about a resident's performance into knowledge for how to help them to improve, or knowledge about variation. Any proposed changes, they required careful communication that attended to the myriad of intrinsic and extrinsic motivators that influenced behavior change, or psychology. Their approach was the opposite of one and done, in that they failed repeatedly and learned from those failures, a journey that spanned nearly a decade, an example of theory of knowledge. They developed an assessment tool called Observable Practice Activities, or OPAs, that allows for a high degree of construct alignment between assessors and the assessment tool. They achieved even greater alignment by providing feedback on the feedback to help those faculty members who struggled with the assessment forms. They identified factors such as time of year, rotation, and assessor that contributed to variation seen in their learner assessments and used this deep understanding of variation to determine whether a resident's performance at a given stage of training fell within or outside of the norm. Their example illustrates how Deming's principles can enable the generation of high-quality assessment data provided by motivated assessors and lead to a formative plan for improvement. This example illustrates the complex interplay between the four elements and that Deming's elements are much more intertwined than they are separated. Medical educators must recognize the complex nature of quality improvement. Improvement work follows a circuitous and often unpredictable path, rather than a linear one. Changes in one part of the system have the potential to have profound and sometimes unintended consequences in other parts. The broader field of complexity in healthcare recognizes these phenomena and recommends adaptive approaches that have underpinnings such as cognitive flexibility, iterative processing, motivation, and perseverance, similar to those espoused by Deming's system of profound knowledge. Section 4. Moving Forward, Opportunities and Challenges. Applying quality improvement in medical education is already an expectation. Accreditation systems in multiple countries include clear language indicating that medical schools and residency programs should engage in continuous quality improvement to improve their educational processes. However, many faculty do not recognize these mandates as opportunities for improvement. An initial step educators can take is to be more explicit with the use of quality improvement by drawing upon time-tested methodologies or frameworks such as the Model for Improvement, Lean, or Six Sigma, that translate Deming's theory into practice. There are many useful guides and resources that educators can access to enrich their learning. Educators should strongly consider choosing a quality improvement framework to match the one used by their partner health systems. This can improve opportunities for collaboration, resonate with clinical faculty members, and model improvement methods for learners. At the outset, we were very careful to say that quality improvement can improve medical education and help it to achieve its goals. However, common missteps continue to plague quality improvement activities in healthcare, and educators would be wise to recognize and avoid them. Throughout this paper, we have identified a number of examples, jumping quickly to a solution without fully characterizing the underlying process issues, treating implementation as a one-and-done phenomenon without using serial PDSA cycles to refine the intervention, failing to discern common cause versus special cause variation and thus choosing the wrong intervention, failing to learn from failure, missing opportunities to take advantage of intrinsic motivation or the characteristics of a successful innovation, and prematurely evaluating an intervention without fully refining its integral components. When used authentically, quality improvement provides teams with the necessary tools and approaches to make continuous and meaningful improvement in their educational programs. How does one avoid solutionism? That is, the tendency to adopt the surface features of an intervention without incorporating an understanding of the deeper theory and evidence to design a robust and thoughtful implementation approach. What are the hallmarks of an authentic quality improvement approach? We propose the following 5 cardinal features. 1. The 4 elements of the system of profound knowledge are interrelated in their application. 2. All parts of the system share an aim with constancy of purpose. 3. The final product is not the same as the starting product. The first idea is not the last one. 4. Those who seek to improve value failure and expect that sustained success will not occur right away. And 5. The people who experience the change will say they have had a voice in the change. Effective and authentic quality improvement requires a team, with representation from key stakeholders in the process to be improved. Each stakeholder brings a part of the knowledge needed to identify potential improvements. Each will need to help implement, evaluate, and sustain a change. In healthcare, that means working across professions, for example, physicians, nurses, pharmacists, patients, and families. In medical education, key stakeholders might include faculty members, staff, students, residents, and patients. Our structures and ways of working, for example, schedules, expectations, and long-standing hierarchies, often make it difficult to pull teams together and support them in meaningful work. There is an opportunity to bring people together, for example, collaboration between quality improvement experts and medical education teams and committees, institute new processes, and build new structures to bridge the divide between medical education and quality improvement. Effective quality improvement also requires a wide range of skills and approaches that educators may not possess. Therefore, an important step involves creating new professional development opportunities so that educators learn about quality improvement methods and theories and how to apply them to improve their educational practice. Treating faculty members and educators as, quote, co-learners such that they acquire new quality improvement skills alongside residents, an approach one of us has taken at the University of Toronto, can build capacity amongst faculty members to incorporate improvement principles into their daily work and teach them to others. Although we included in this paper selected examples where quality improvement methods improved educational processes, the literature contains a relatively small number of robust examples to draw upon. We therefore advocate for continued scholarship and encourage people to write about the different ways that they have been able to bring a quality improvement lens to improve medical education, highlighting both their successes and failures. The Standards for Quality Improvement Reporting Excellence, or SQIRE, recently developed an extension of the SQIRE writing guidelines called SQIRE EDU to encourage scholarship related to quality improvement in health professions education. Section 5, Conclusion. Some see quality improvement as a form of practice, others a scientific method or a set of tools. Above all, we believe that quality improvement is a mindset, informed by Deming's system of profound knowledge. When applied authentically, quality improvement is not just about finding the right solution, but rather is a rigorous approach to working successfully with complex systems like medical education, where any change will result in both intended and unintended consequences. Furthermore, the bidirectional relationship between quality of care and medical education means that learners who train in clinical environments that deliver high-quality care have better patient outcomes in their individual future practices. Thus, medical educators who use quality improvement in their educational practices help create learning environments that imprint positively on learners and contribute to better outcomes in their clinical learning environments. Ultimately, if we hope to produce highly competent future physicians who use quality improvement to improve their patients' care, we should model those behaviors in our own work as scholarly educators.